An Osho Talk. The Original Man. Talks on Zen. Number 8.
Tozan said, subtly included within the true, inquiry and response come up together. Communing with the source and communing with the process, it includes integration and includes the road. Merging is auspicious. Do not violate it. Naturally real, yet inconceivable. It is not within the province of delusion or enlightenment. With causal conditions, time and season, quiescently it shines bright. In its fineness, it fits into spacelessness. In its greatness, it is utterly beyond location. A hair's breadth deviation will fail to accord with the proper attunement. Now, there are sudden and gradual, in connection with which are set up basic approaches. Once basic approaches are distinguished, then there are guiding rules. But even though the basis is reached and the approach comprehended, true eternity still flows. Outwardly still, while inwardly moving, like a tethered colt, a trapped rat, the ancient saints pitied them and bestowed upon them the teaching. According to their delusion, they called black as white. When erroneous imaginations cease, the acquiescent no-mind realizes itself. When the wooden man begins to sing, the stone woman gets up to dance. It's not within reach of feeling or discrimination. How could it admit of consideration in thought? Practice secretly, working within, as though a fool, like an idiot. If you can achieve continuity, this is called the host within the host.
Manisha, before I discuss upon very beautiful statements of Tozan, I have to introduce you few new friends of Avirbhava for the Museum of Gods. Something has to be said before she brings her new acquirements. Our researchers have been working day and night to find out all the worlds that have been worshipped as gods. But they were very much surprised that parrots have never been worshipped anywhere. They looked into this encyclopedia and that encyclopedia. They have found every possible source to look into. And they were worried what to do because she has brought such beautiful parrots. And I am going to allow her these parrots in the museum of gods of my own reason. Why parrots have not been included in gods by any country, by any race, in any time, it is very clear to me because parrots are just like rabbis, pandits, popes. They repeat. They don't have any spontaneous response to anything. And priests and rabbis and the popes have always been called parrots. Naturally, they could not allow their competitors as gods. Except this, I don't think there is any reason. But as far as I am concerned, only for this reason I will allow parrots into the museum of gods. They are the only one who represent the whole priesthood of all the religions. The researchers have sent their report to me. Many birds have been objects of worship down through history. Among the Indians of the northwest coast of America, the crow and raven are worshipped. They believe that the birds produce dry land by the beating of their wings. In India, offerings are regularly made to crows. In India, crows are thought to be your forefathers. The Apaches of North America believe there are spirits of divine origin in the eagle and other birds. The Ostiaks regard a tree as holy on which an eagle has nested. The eagle owl is worshipped as a mediator, and the owl is particularly important among the Ainus. Its cry may not be imitated, since it is believed to be capable of bewitching. In parts of Australia, the wren is worshipped. In Central America, Brazil, and West Africa, the thunderbird is known as the god of the tempest. In many countries, the swallow is regarded as a sacred bird. Misfortune will come to anyone who kills it, and it may not be touched or caught. It is also taboo to take the nest of a swallow. In India itself, the Hindus has believed the fish as the first incarnation of God. Tortoise as another incarnation of God. Pig as another incarnation of God. But the researchers were worried. The parrot are not mentioned anywhere. And they could not find the reason. The reason is absolutely clear. That the parrot is so much alike the pandit, so much alike the rabbi repeating the scriptures, so much alike like the priest, bishop, cardinal or the pope, that they cannot allow these fellows. It is a question of business. These parrots repeat whatever you say. They don't answer. I will tell Avirbhava to bring her parrots and to show how they repeat. Avirbhava, bring your guards. Joke for the parrots. Claret, the parrot, has abandoned her perch and is sitting on the light sage. near the telephone when Kovalevsky gets home. Kovalevsky opens the door and steps into a huge mountain of bird seed. Immediately Kovalevsky makes a dive for the light shed and grabs claret. "Did you order more bird seed?" He bellows at the parrot, clutched in his hand. Claret remains silent and glares at Kovalevsky with her beady eyes. "Did you order more bird seed?" Kovalevsky screams again. Claret does not blink. "Right," shouts Kovalevsky, and he takes the parrot upstairs to the attic and ties her to a beam with her wings stretched out. Kovalevsky stomps downstairs and Claret is left staring into space. She looks around and she can just see Jesus on a crucifix nailed to the opposite wall. In a quiet whisper, Claret asks, "Did you order more bird seed too?" When you will be doing your gibberish, then put your parrots, they will do the gibberish with you. Tozan said, "Subtly included within the true inquiry and response come up together. It is a very pregnant statement. Inquiry and response coming up together. If your inquiry is honest with your total being, you want to know the response will come immediately. There will not be a gap of time between your inquiry and the response from existence. Existence is very responsible. If no answer comes, that simply means your inquiry is not total. Existence responses only to totality. Be 100% in your inquiry, and it has never been that the existence has failed anyone. It has always given the response. Communing with the source and communing with the process, it includes integration and included the road. Communing with the source, once you have come in communication with the source, existence has started responding to you. Then the whole process the integration of your being and the road that you followed are seen clearly as one. The road is not other than the goal. And your integration is not other than your totality. The whole process of being a Buddha is nothing but a response from existence of an honest inquiry. It includes all. Merging is auspicious. Do not violate it. Perhaps the only thing that can be said auspicious is merging with the whole. Taking away all your barriers, hindrances, defenses, just jumping into the ocean and disappear into the ocean without leaving a trace. What is the point of being a dewdrop when you can be the very ocean? Merging is auspicious. Do not violate it. Naturally real, yet inconceivable, it is not within the province of delusion or enlightenment. Because of our mind, we always divide everything into opposite polarities, delusion, enlightenment, night and day, birth and death. They are one process. But the mind cannot conceive, it is just intrinsically incapable to conceive the oneness of life and death, of light and darkness. And even if somehow it can be proved logically that they are one, the greatest problem arises about delusion or enlightenment. Are they one? Tozan is a great master in saying that they are one. The moment illusion disappears, enlightenment also disappears. It is not that delusion disappears and you remain enlightened. The very idea of remaining enlightened is part of delusion. They both remain together or they go together, leaving you alone, neither deluded nor enlightened, just simple, ordinary. A nothingness, a nobody, a pure space. With causal conditions, time and season, quiescently it shines bright. This nothingness shines bright. It is not your idea of nothingness. You think nothingness means nothingness. Tozan or any Buddha means by nothingness, no thingness. It is not a thing that you have arrived. It is a space. It is consciousness. It is being, it is silence, it is beauty, it is truth. Nothing is graspable by your hands. In its fineness, it fits into spacelessness. This is going really to the very peak, ultimate peak. Meditation begins with finding a space where there is no thought, where there is no body, no form, no mind. This is the beginning. But space is still there. At the ultimate point, space also disappears. Then what remains? That is the indescribable. Up to space, language is capable. Beyond space, we are absolutely dumb. In its greatness, it is utterly beyond location. A hair's breadth's deviation will fail to accord with the proper attunement. Now there are sudden and gradual in connection with which we set up basic approaches. Once basic approaches are distinguished, then there are guiding rules. But even though the basis is reached and the approach comprehended, true eternity still flows. It has been since Gautama Buddha a continuous problem whether enlightenment is gradual or sudden. If it is gradual, that means it will be partial, step by step, slowly, slowly, you become enlightened. A part of you becomes enlightened, but the remaining part remains unenlightened. But this is absurd. Although it has appealed to many people that how can we attain enlightenment suddenly? Nothing can be attained in the world suddenly. You cannot become the richest man of the world suddenly. A gradual process of acquiring money, wealth, power, everything in the world is gradual. Just because of this reason that everything in the world is gradual, I say unto you that enlightenment cannot be gradual. It does not belong to this world. It has to be sudden. There is no other way. Because you cannot dissect it, you cannot say 50% enlightenment. You cannot say here goes a 10% enlightened person. One is either enlightened or not. There is no other possibility. Because it has to be total, it means it is already there. If it was to grow, it would have been gradual. No growth can be sudden. Every growth is gradual. A child becomes young, the young man becomes old. A small plant becomes a big tree. But everything that grows is gradual. Enlightenment does not grow and does not decline. It is already there in you. It needs only a recognition. Recognition can be sudden. It just needs a total quest and turning in, and suddenly you are no more what you used to be, you are a Buddha. It will be very difficult for you to tell anybody. It will be very difficult even to accept yourself that you are a Buddha. But whether it is difficult or impossible, it does not make any difference to the reality. You are a Buddha. Sometimes you forget, and sometimes you remember. Forgetting, remembering, forgetting, remembering. A point comes, remembrance becomes so solid that you don't forget. But it is a sudden phenomenon. It is the only sudden phenomenon because it is not of this world. Outwardly still, while inwardly moving, like a tethered colt, a trapped rat, the ancient saints pitied them and bestowed upon them the teaching. According to their delusion, they called black as white. When erroneous imaginations cease, the acquiescent no mind realizes. The realization of no mind is just like a lake which had waves moving it, and now the winds are gone and the waves have silence. It is the same lake. While it was in a turmoil, it was our delusion. It is the same consciousness. When it gets identified with things, our nature does not change. Neither the lake's nature changes by waves. Soon the winds will be gone and the waves will disappear in the lake, and the lake will become just a quiet mirror. It is the same lake. It is the same consciousness which is in delusion, disturbed, It is the same consciousness which in enlightenment is undisturbed. The only difference is of disturbance. So find out the causes, what disturbs your consciousness. And drop those causes and disturbance will disappear. Enlightenment is not some achievement. It is simply the absence of all disturbing causes. When the lake becomes silent, a mirror, it simply means the winds have gone home. Just the cause of the disturbance is no more there. What is the cause of your disturbance? Your one cause is identification, my body, my mind, my religion, my country, my race. It has thousands of implications, but always it is an identification. Drop all identification because they are simply mind projections. They don't have any reality. What do you mean? That I am a Hindu, or I am a Mohammedan, or I am a Christian. You were not born a Christian. You were not born a Hindu. Your parents may have believed in Hinduism, in Buddhism, in Christianity, but their belief cannot enter into the child that is born. The child is pure, still, there are no waves stirring its lake of consciousness. It is because of this reason it has been recognized by all the mystics of the world, that finally the mystic becomes like a child. In Tozan's words, he becomes almost a fool, an idiot, because he knows nothing of the worldly wisdom. He behaves so spontaneously that he is always out of place. He is an unfit. You can forgive the child because he is a child. You cannot forgive an old man who behaves like a child. Hence you have not forgiven saints. You have started worshipping them. That is a way of not forgiving them, making them dead gods. Saying that they are special people, incarnations of God, prophets, messengers, messiahs. We are ordinary people, The truth is just the opposite. They are the most ordinary people, the most simple, so simple that you can call them even a fool, an idiot. You are the extraordinary people in your egos. So the first, most fundamental cause is identification. So unidentification becomes the process. Go on unidentifying with your body, with your mind, with your feelings. Go on eliminating all identifications. Then what is left? Just a pure space. That is the last thing to be dropped. It is simply a process of merger into the ocean, into the whole. You cannot remain separate. Being separate from the whole is the cause of all our misery. To be one with the whole, there is no possibility of any misery, you are no more. For being miserable, first you have to be. When erroneous imagination cease, the acquiescent no mind realizes itself. When the wooden man begins to sing, when you dance, if you are not identified with the body, what is the body? Just a skeleton. Tozan is saying, when the wooden man sings, the stone woman gets up to dance. It is not within reach of feeling or discrimination. How could it admit of consideration in thought? If you are not identified with the body, with the mind, if you are just a watcher, and a song arises in you, it is arising and flowing through your dead body. A corpse is singing. And if you start dancing, a corpse is dancing. You remain in every movement, in every gesture, just a watcher. This is the simple secret of all religiousness, just to be a watcher. It cuts through all identifications in a single blow. It leaves you in a pure space. That is the beginning of spacelessness. If you have come to the space within, you have come to the gates of the temple. one step more, and you will be drowned into spacelessness. Tozan says, practice secretly, working within as though a fool, like an idiot. If you can achieve continuity, this is called the host within the host. Men's many problems arise from his desire to exhibit. In psychology, they call it a disease. One wants to exhibit who I am. When you are putting your tie rightly, looking in the mirror, your whole desire is to be recognized as a man of dignity. I am not against dignity, and I am not saying that put your tie backwards. I am saying that don't be identified with this personality. Remain continuously watching yourself, what you are doing. There is no need to change it. If it changes on itself just because of your watching, and it is one of the secrets. Albert Einstein came to know, which mystics have known in their own way, that when you look inside the atom consists of three particles. They are moving in a certain way, but the moment you see, they just stop and start moving in a different way. Exactly like when you are in your bathroom singing some stupid song, cleaning your teeth and singing also, making faces before the mirror, and suddenly you become aware that somebody is looking from the keyhole, you change your posture. You become a right person. What nonsense you are doing. Just a little moment of freedom was there, that too has been taken. It may be just a small child looking through the keyhole, but that watchfulness of the child changes your behavior. It has nothing to do. He is not saying anything. In fact, the child must be enjoying it if you are making faces that daddy is doing great things. He never does these things outside. But you stop immediately. It is autonomous. It is not that you make an effort to stop. You simply stop, knowing that somebody is watching. It was perfectly good for human beings, but when Albert Einstein came across the fact that looking deep into the constituents of atoms, just the very fact that you are looking changes their behavior. They don't behave the same as they were behaving just a second before. They change their course. They become more gentlemanlike. It has been a long understanding of the mystics that the moment you have become a watcher, you don't have to change anything in your behavior. Just your being a watcher is enough. Your behavior will change accordingly. It will become more spontaneous. It will be more in communion with existence. It will be more loving. It will be more compassionate. It will be more joyful. It will be more graceful. It will be more grateful. Your whole past will have to be dropped. Not that you have to drop it. It will drop by itself. A new man, a fresh man, arises out of watchfulness. This secret has not been told by the priest of any religion, that there is only one way of transformation, and that is not discipline and fasting and standing on your head and doing all kinds of contortions of your body. The only way to pass through a metamorphosis from the mortal to the immortal, from the prison of your identifications into the freedom of the skies, the key is watchfulness. A haiku: when the stone man nods his head, the wooden pillar claps its hands. The master who has written this haiku, his name is not known. Just to remain unidentified. But he is saying what is happening in the world is, the stone man nods his head, the wooden pillar claps its hands. Nobody is conscious. Everything is happening in unconsciousness, almost like somnambulists, sleepwalkers. Our situation of this sleep can have a change just by bringing a little consciousness, a little awareness. I say a little awareness just not to freak you out, because the little awareness is not little. Just if you bring a little consciousness, a little watchfulness, the whole ocean drops into you. Just give way and you are gone. And what remains is the truth, the eternal truth. Here we do meditation every day. By your meditation, this place becomes auspicious. But yesterday I saw proper Sagar, not unexpectedly. He is so proper that he cannot fall without proper adjustment. So he was the only person who was sitting when everybody was dead. But that way he was showing his stupidity. It is not allowed here. If this kind of people do, then I will have to keep few guards to put them dead. If they need proper guidance to die, somebody will have to give them proper guidance that this is the way to die. But I hope it will not be needed. Proper Sagar has been from the very beginning proper. Everything that he does has to be proper British. He cannot get out of that insanity. At least here, you need not be insane. But his problem must have been that how to fall. Some lady is lying by the side. And if you fall, somebody may fall over you. And everything will become improper. Nobody cared about him. But the guards informed me that proper Sagar was not participating in the meditation. It is for you all. Anybody who does not want to participate in the meditation totally is not allowed in the discourse either. The meditation is simply the justification, the experiential justification of whatever has been talked. I talked about Dzogchen, now we have to feel and experience what Dzogchen is saying. What truth is there? This is not a question of mannerism and proper behavior and etiquette. Here nobody is a gentleman and a lady. Here are simple human beings. Without any claim of speciality. This is the basic ground to approach into your being, otherwise you will remain standing. Manisha has asked, Dzogchen speaks of proper attunement. Yes, he speaks about proper attunement, but he does not speak about proper sagar. Is not proper attunement are being in harmony with the Master a truer expression of what transpires between Master and disciple than surrender? Or is surrender a prerequisite before one can hope to be in tune? Manisha's surrender has nothing to do, as far as meditation is concerned. You don't surrender to anybody. You are simply going inwards. There is nobody except you. You will not find anybody on the way except you. But surrender has a totally different significance. When you have known yourself and you have felt the cosmic relationship that you are part of this great universe, then you cannot go against nature. That is what surrender is. Surrender is not to be done knowing your cosmic naturalness, your Buddhahood. You cannot go against the cosmos. This not going against the cosmos, but remaining in trust and love and absolute surrender, wherever the wind takes you, you are available. Surrender is a byproduct. It is not a prerequisite. It comes on its own accord. Before we enter in, I am always concerned whether you will come out or not. Poor Nivedano can go on beating his dream. You may not come. You may have already merged. You may not think it proper to come back. What is the point every day to go in and then to come back? It seems to be not very proper. Either go in and be finished, or don't bother about it. No, there is a reason every day to go in, and every day to go deeper and deeper, because it is an infinity within you. There are no milestones, and there is no end of the road. And every day come back whether you have gone in or not, you will have to measure it by your changed behavior in the outside world. There is no other way how to know how much deep you have gone. Have you reached the Buddha? Then it is going to affect your whole individuality. You will have to arrange your whole life in the new light. So go every day deeper and deeper, but always remember that when you have enjoyed the inner space and Nivedana calls you forth with his drum beat, be compassionate on him. Silently gathering the experience that you have collected, watching the way how you enter, slowly move outward again. By and by, as the Sufis say, if you pass through a garden of roses, even if you don't touch the roses, your clothes will get the fragrance. When you go in, your consciousness will start moving into your actions, your blindness will start disappearing, your darkness will become lessening. You are not to do anything. That is the most important thing about meditation, that it is a single thing. Not so many things and so many rituals, just a simple process of going in and let that experience allow to change your whole life structure. You don't have to do anything else. Before you go in, few laughters, So at least you remember the path is full of laughter. I don't want you to be serious meditators. I want you to be laughing Buddhas. He looks so beautiful, so blissful, sobs Molly Mooch over her husband, Marvin's coffin. Yes, he does. Agrees Mr. Kaff, the undertaker. But there is just one thing, sniffs Molly. And what is that? Asks Mr. Kaff with a concerned voice. Well, explains Molly, green was never his color. I think he would have been much happier wearing a blue suit. Like that gentleman in the other coffin over there. Don't worry, Mrs. Mooch, says the undertaker, I can fix it. If you will just go to the waiting room for a few minutes. Less than a minute later, Mr. Kaff calls Molly back into the showroom. Sure enough, Marvin is wearing the other man's blue suit. That's wonderful. Guess Molly, in admiration. But however did you change them so quickly? I did not, replies Mr. Kaff. I just switched heads. Kowalski and Zabriskie are sitting at the dancing buffalo pub, drinking a few beers. Hey, says Zabriskie to his pal, you look pretty down. What is the matter? Well, says Kowalski, something has been bothering me for days now. I just gotta tell you about it. Okay, replies Zabriskie. We have been buddies for years. Tell me about your troubles. Well, confides Kowalski, last Saturday I went to Madame Snatch's whorehouse. And who do I see there but your pretty wife Getty? I hate to say it, Zabriskie, but your wife is a prostitute. Nah. Betty aren't no prostitute, answers Zabriskie. She's just a substitute on the weekend. My husband is fantastic, exclaims Doreen to Mabel and Blossom over coffee one morning. He bought me a mink coat and a diamond wristwatch. That's nothing, snaps Mabel. My husband has bought me a luxury sailing boat and a speedboat. my husband is poor, admits Blasen, but he is very special. He has a prick so long that 12 yellow canaries can stand on it side by side. There is long silence. Girls, says Doreen, I must admit I was lying. My husband did not buy me those fancy things. He bought me a plastic raincoat and a cheap watch. But I am very happy with them. Since we are telling the truth, confesses Mabel, I should tell you that I did not get any fancy boats. All I got was a rowing boat right on the river. Doreen and Mabel look at Blasen. Okay, okay, says Blasen. I will tell you the truth too. That business about 12 yellow canaries standing side by side on my husband's prick is not true. The 12th word can only stand on one leg. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be frozen. Gather your whole consciousness inside. Concentrate it and move deeper to the center. deeper and deeper. There is no question of fear. It is your own space you are entering, your own sky. This is your Buddha nature. Beyond the body, beyond the mind, just a watching, just a witnessing is the Buddha. To make it clear, Nivedana, relax. See the body lying there. See the mind lying there. But you are neither. You are standing aloof, watching, just watching, and all clouds disappear and the moon shines bright. Carry this experience 24 hours as an underlying river expressing itself in your actions, words, responses, gestures, in your silences, waking and sleep will not make any difference. Your Buddhahood is there, a watcher on the hills. In the darkest night, it is still a light unto yourself. Nivedana, come back, all the Buddhas, carrying your Buddhahood with you, slowly and gracefully. Just sit down for a few moments without any fear, remembering that you are a Buddha, and from this moment you will act as a Buddha, you will behave as a Buddha, you will love as a Buddha. It is a very simple phenomenon. Because it is your ultimate reality, just a question of how to express it, how to recognize it, meditation gives you both. It allows you to recognize it and then to carry it into the marketplace, to manifest it. Always remember, the world was never in so much need of Buddhas as it is today. The future of humanity will depend only if we can spread Buddhahood like a wildfire around the earth. There is no other alternative. Can we celebrate the gathering of the Buddhas?
Yes.